Heartbreak House, a fantasia in the Russian manner on English themes by George Bernard Shaw. Act 1. The hilly country, in the middle of the north edge of Sussex, looking very pleasant on a fine evening at the end of September, is seen through the windows of a room which has been built so as to resemble the afterpart of an old-fashioned, high-pooped ship, with a stern gallery. For the windows are ship-built, with heavy timbering, and run right across the room as continuously as the stability of the wall allows. A row of lockers under the windows provides an unupholstered window seat.
Interrupted by twin glass doors,
respectively halfway between the stern post and the sides.
Another door strains the illusion a little.
By being apparently in the ship's port side, and yet leading
not to the open sea, but to the entrance hall of the house.
Between this door and the stern galley are bookshelves.
There are electric light switches beside the door leading to the hall and the glass doors in the stern gallery.
Against the starboard wall is a carpenter's bench.
The vice has a board in its jaws, and the floor is littered with shavings overflowing from a waste paper basket.
In the same wall, between the bench and the windows, is a narrow doorway with a half door, above which a glimpse of the room beyond shows that it is a shelved pantry with bottles and kitchen crockery.
On the starboard side,
but close to the middle, is a plain oak drawing table with drawing board, T-square, straight edges, set squares, mathematical instruments, saucers of watercolor, a tumbler of discolored water, Indian ink, pencils, and brushes on it. The drawing board is set so that the draftsman's chair has the window on its left hand.
On the floor at the end of the table, on its right, is a ship's fire bucket.
On the port side of the room, near the bookshelves, is a sofa with its back to the windows. It is a sturdy, mahogany article, oddly upholstered in sailcloth, including the bolster, with a couple of blankets hanging over the back.
Between the sofa and the drawing table is a big wicker chair with broad arms and a low sloping back with its back to the light. A small but stout table of teak
with a round top and gate legs
stands against the port wall between the door and the bookcase.
It is the only article in the room that suggests, not at all convincingly, a woman's hand in the furnishing. The uncarpeted floor of narrow boards is caulked and holystoned like a deck.
The garden to which the glass doors lead dips to the south before the landscape rises again to the hills. Emerging from the hollow is the cupola of an observatory.
Between the observatory and the house is a flagstaff on a little esplanade, with a hammock on the east side and a long garden seat on the west.
A young lady, gloved and hatted, with a dust coat on, is sitting in the window seat with her body twisted to enable her to look out at the view.
One hand props her chin. The other hangs down with a volume of the Temple Shakespeare in it, and her fingers stuck in the page she has been reading. A clock strikes six.
The young lady turns and looks at her watch. She rises with an air of one who waits and is almost at the end of her patience.
She is a pretty girl. Slender, fair, and intelligent-looking, nicely but not expensively dressed.
Evidently not a smart idler.
With a sigh of weary resignation, she comes to the draftsman's chair, sits down, and begins to read Shakespeare.
Presently, the book sinks to her lap, her eyes closed,
and she dozes into a slumber. An elderly woman servant comes in from the hall with three unopened bottles of rum on a tray. She passes through and disappears in the pantry without noticing the young lady.
She places the bottles on the shelf and fills her tray with empty bottles.
As she returns with these, the young lady lets her book drop, awakening herself and startling the woman servant so that she all but lets the tray fall.
God bless us!
The young lady picks up the book and places it on the table.
Sorry to wake you, miss, I'm sure, but you're a stranger to me. What might you be waiting here for now?
Waiting for somebody to show some signs of knowing that I have been invited here.
Oh, you're invited, are you? And has nobody come? Dear, dear.
A wild-looking old gentleman came and looked in at the window, and I heard him calling out, "Nurse, there's a young and attractive female waiting in the poop. Go and see what she wants." Are you the nurse?
Yes, miss. I'm Nurse Guinness. That was old Captain Shotover, Mrs. Hushabye's father. I heard him roaring, but I thought it was for something else. I suppose it was Mrs. Hushabye that invited you, Ducky?
I understood her to do so, but really, I think I'd better go.
Oh, don't think of such a thing, miss. If Mrs. Hushabye has forgotten all about it, it will be a pleasant surprise for her to see you, won't it?
It has been a very unpleasant surprise to me to find that nobody expects me.
You'll get used to it, miss. This house is full of surprises for them that don't know our ways.
Captain Shotover looks in from the hall suddenly, an ancient but still hardy man with an immense white beard, in a reefer jacket with a whistle hanging from his neck.
Nurse, there is a whole doll and a handbag on the front steps for everybody to fall over. Also a tennis racket. Who the devil left them there?
They are mine, I'm afraid.
Nurse? Who is this misguided and unfortunate young lady?
She says Miss Hesse invited her, sir.
And had she no friend, no parents to warn her against my daughter's invitations? This is a pretty sort of house, by heavens. A young and attractive lady is invited here. Her luggage is left on the steps for hours, and she herself is deposited in the poop and abandoned, tired and starving. This is our hospitality. These are our manners. No room ready, no hot water, no welcoming hostess. Our visitor is to sleep in the tool shed and to wash in the duck pond.
Now it's all right, Captain. I'll get the lady some tea and her room shall be ready before she's finished it. Take off your hat, Ducky, and make yourself at home.
Ducky? Do you suppose, woman, that because this young lady has been insulted and neglected, you have the right to address her as you address my wretched children, whom you have brought up in ignorance of the commonest decencies of social intercourse?
Never mind him, Doty.
Quite unconcerned, she goes out into the hall on her way to the kitchen.
Madam, will you favor me with your name?
My name is Ellie Dunn.
Dunn? I had a bosun whose name was Dunn. He was originally a pirate in China. He set up as a ship's chandler with stores which I have every reason to believe he stole from me. No doubt he became rich. Are you his daughter?
No, certainly not. I am proud to be able to say that though my father has not been a successful man, nobody has ever had one word to say against him. I think my father is the best man I have ever known.
He must be greatly changed. Has he attained the 7th degree of concentration?
I don't understand.
But how could he with a daughter? I, madam, have 2 daughters. One of them is Hesione Hushabye, who invited you here. I keep this house. She upsets it. I desire to attain the 7th degree of concentration. She invites visitors and leaves me to entertain them.
Nurse Guinness returns with the tea tray, which she places on the teak table.
I have a 2nd daughter who is, thank God, in a remote part of the empire with her numbskull of a husband. As a child, she thought the figurehead of my ship, the Dauntless, the most beautiful thing on earth. He resembled it. He had the same expression, wooden yet enterprising. She married him and will never set foot in this house again.
Indeed, you never were more mistaken. She is in England this very moment. You have been told 3 times this week that she is coming home for a year for her health. I'm very glad you should be to see your own daughter again after all these years.
I am not glad. The natural term of the affection of the human animal for its offspring is 6 years. My daughter Ariadne was born when I was 46. I am now 88. If she comes, I am not at home. If she wants anything, let her take it. If she asks for me, let her be informed that I am extremely old and have totally forgotten her.
That's no talk to offer to a young lady. Here, Ducky, have some tea and don't listen to him.
Nurse Guinness pours out a cup of tea.
Now, before high heaven, they have given this innocent child Indian tea, the stuff they tan their own leather insides with.
He seizes the cup and the teapot and empties both into the leathern bucket.
Oh, please! I'm so tired! I should have been glad of anything!
Oh, what a thing to do! The poor lamb is ready to drop!
You shall have some of my tea. Do not touch that fly-blown cake. Nobody eats it here except the dogs.
He disappears into the pantry.
There's a man for you. They say he sold himself to the devil in Zanzibar before he was a captain. And the older he grows, the more I believe them.